before. Is my mic on? There we go. I think everybody in this room has heard me preach before, so you know that I like to start with something funny. I heard about this pastor, and he got up one morning and he saw that there was graffiti on the side of the church. So he went to the store and he bought a can of paint. Now this pastor was a little bit cheap, so he just bought the one can of paint. And he looked at the graffiti and he thought, well, it's okay, I'll just thin the paint and, you know, make it last. And so he did one coat and it really didn't hide. He did another coat and it really didn't hide. And he kept thinning the paint to make it stretch. And eventually he called the associate pastor over and said, what do you think? And she said, it's not really working. It's not really covering it up. But I know what you need to do. And the pastor said, what? And she said, repaint and thin no more. I've never done a pun-based joke for you guys before. I would say I'm sorry, but I'm not. That was great. May these words be to God's glory. You know, sometimes I'm amazed at the way God lines things up. The reading for the lectionary today was selected years ago. It's part of a cycle. We didn't select this week. And yet, quote, the nations have fallen into the hole they themselves have made. Their feet are caught in the net they themselves hid. I couldn't have picked a better metaphor for the political situation in this country, and particularly the mistreatment of immigrants on the southern border. The U.S. is a nation of immigrants, of course, but most of those who come in from the southern border are fleeing poverty and misery that the U.S. has helped create over decades of exploitative foreign policy. So if you've been living under a rock on Mars with your fingers in your ears in a cave, and you haven't heard about this, here's what's happening. Immigrations and Customs Enforcement, ICE for short, is taking children as young as 18 months from their parents when they attempt to cross the border together and putting them into detention centers. That's a nice word for where these kids are. If you've seen the pictures, these children are sleeping on the floor behind chain-link fences. ICE is putting children into cages after tearing them away from their parents. When I heard that Jeff Sessions had used the Bible to justify what the United States is doing, I intentionally avoided hearing the story. I thought, I don't need to know exactly what he said. It'll just make me mad. But on Thursday, I was in my car and I wasn't paying attention, and NPR was on, and before I knew it, they were playing the clip of Sessions saying, persons who violate the law of our nation are subject to prosecution. I would cite you to the Apostle Paul and his clear and wise command in Romans 13 to obey the laws of the government because God has ordained them for the purpose of order. And before I knew it, I spat, oh, F you, Sessions. I did not say F. But that's what we do nowadays. We spit obscenities because we're often so shocked that we don't know what else to say. The thing that was so troubling to me about the Bible citation is that by bringing this verse into public discourse, Sessions reminded everyone of the church's long history of entangling the church and the state with infamously bloody results. Humanity's government and God's sovereignty were never meant to commingle. Sometimes God does things through the government, but at no time did Jesus, in particular, Jesus was big on this, ever support the divine right of kings. The idea that God ordained that so-and-so should be in charge so everyone else should obey. That stuff came in the letters of Paul, which were heavily curated by the European monarchy, who obviously had a vested interest in making citizens believe that, as they say, we're from the government and we're here to help. Besides, what about the separation of church and state? And if you're a person of color, you know that humankind's law and divine law are often polar opposites. So using the Bible to justify putting children in cages is obviously outrageous and offensive, but he did it. And he wrote that speech ahead of time. It wasn't off the cuff, which means that his advisors looked over it and went, using the Bible to justify the unconscionable? Sounds great. You should say that. Are you tired of the seemingly endless onslaught of terribleness that keeps coming from the news? Yeah. Are you exhausted from feeling like there's a string tied to your heart and the world has it, and you just keep getting yanked around, and every time there's something more atrocious? Yes, the president signed an executive order mitigating what ICE is allowed to do to families at the border after his initial executive order, which started the whole thing. But But as Trevor Noah said, it's a bit like Superman throwing a meteor at the Earth and then stopping it. It's like, thanks. Appreciate it. In the gospel reading for today, Jesus and some of his disciples get on a boat to cross a lake. In the middle of their journey, a storm arises, and the disciples think they're going to die. So they wake up Jesus, and Jesus calms the storm. Then he says, and this is the really important part, "Why are you frightened? Don't you have faith yet?" Jesus isn't mad that they woke him up. He's not scared of the storm either. Instead, he says, "Guys, did you forget who you're sailing with?" The storm, of course, is a metaphor for all the things that come against us in life, whether it's sickness, the loss of a loved one, depression, anything. Life is always going to have storms. We can't stop that. But what we can do as Christians is remember who we're sailing with. A few years ago, when they were debating the uses of medical marijuana, I heard the argument that for cancer patients, the THC helped them eat and take the pain when they underwent chemo. And it caught my attention because I was like, okay, the food thing I understand. THC makes you hungry. But I didn't know that marijuana was an analgesic, that it helps with pain. So I was curious, and I did some research, and I found out that, yes, in some patients, THC relieves physical pain. But the data said that more than that, what the marijuana did was to calm the patients down, even though they were hurting. That is, it helped them tolerate the pain without the added burden of fear. Pain, whether physical or mental, is a scary thing. It's a warning system that something is wrong, that something needs our attention. So naturally, when we feel pain, we get anxious. There's something we need to attend to. And often, there's a little voice in the back of our heads saying, well, what's going on? And what if this keeps going on? What if I can't figure out how to make it stop? I can't take this. We start to panic. But the problem is, by thinking that way, we're adding an extra burden on top of what's already going on. Death, sickness, uncertainty, these things will always happen to us. But when we start to panic about the pain, then we have two things taking up our resources, making us feel doubly bad. We're burdening ourselves additionally. And I'm not saying that when we're hurting, we should just tolerate it, you know, just take it and be cool with it. What I am saying is we have a kind of secret weapon that helps us stay on an even keel in the middle of the storm. Well, why would we want to stay calm? I mean, freaking out is a natural response. Because anger over injustice, anxiety in the face of pain, fear about where things are going, these can be useful in small doses. In small doses, they can motivate it to address a wrong. But in large doses, if we allow our panic or our outrage to take over our life, it can cripple us into inaction. If we get too upset, too anxious, we shut down. We avoid engagement because we're so busy nursing our psychic trauma. Has anybody heard the tape of the child being taken from its mother? I haven't, because I know what would happen. I would be so upset and so sad that I would be depressed for days and I wouldn't be able to work. That day in the car when I swore ineffectually at Jeff Sessions, I heard something else, something that made me glad. Do you know what finally convinced Trump to take action, insufficient as it is? The evangelicals and the Southern Baptists, the church, the Protestants, spoke up. They said, we need to keep families together. Now, of course, the most outspoken, like Franklin Graham, didn't blame Trump. But the fact that these religious organizations, 81% of whom voted for Trump, these are the evangelicals, finally said something about an atrocious situation that the administration could actually fix, that got his attention. The Southern Baptists actually addressed it at their annual meeting, June 12th and 13th in Dallas. They adopted a resolution calling for border security while, quote, maintaining the priority of family unity. They put that text into the words. Now, this is hardly, you know, lobbying or going to the border to protest or threatening to withdraw their support. But it means something. that folks who represent the most vocal followers of Jesus Christ did something that took courage. They publicly disagreed with the most powerful man in America, a man whom they themselves helped to put in office. Now, would they have done this? Would they have made this organized statement if they had laid on their metaphorical couches crying about the children? Would they have been able to put together a resolution with that language if the entire annual meeting was all screaming and then an exhausted resignation? I don't think so. When the disciples woke Jesus up, he was annoyed with them because they had been afraid. They had not trusted that even in the midst of the storm, they were safe because of the man with whom they sailed, walked, and lived. He said, "Why are you scared? You ought to know by now who I am and what I can do in your life." Friends, the storms will always come. The good news is we as Christians have the option of taking away that extra burden of panic and anxiety. We have the option when the storm is upon us to say, "You know what? I don't like this. I wish it wasn't happening, but I'm not going to panic because no matter what, Jesus sails these waters with me." Years ago, I was canoeing with my family in Illinois down the Kankakee River. It was a yearly family tradition, and this year we took along my dad's new fiancée. The daughter of Mexican immigrants, my stepmom is funny and tough. She was a principal on the south side of Chicago, and that tells you all you need to know. During this particular trip, my dad and my brother were in one canoe, and my stepmom and I were in another. At one point, we were heading towards some faster water. We didn't need to paddle, which was unusual on the Kankakee, which is a pretty sleepy river. The water was going faster and faster, and my dad and brother were a ways ahead of us. Suddenly, in the very middle of the river, nowhere near the banks, the canoe stopped moving with a thunk and began to list sideways. I looked down and saw that we were stuck on a submerged tree. I must have been 11 or 12, and when I looked at the rim of the canoe and saw that it was less than an inch from the rushing water, I started to panic. I had never felt fear like this before. I really thought we were going to drown. What if we tipped over? How would I find my stuffed turtle, Ambrosius? That actually, I thought about that. It was a big concern. I was a good swimmer, but the water was so fast. I began to babble, "Oh my God, we're stuck. We're going to tip over. What are we going to do? What do we do?" My stepmom's voice was totally calm. "It's okay," she said. "We just have to use our paddles to push off the log." And I was so panicky, she had to actually say, "Take your paddle in your hand. Okay, good. Put it up against the tree. Ready? 1, 2, 3. We pushed off, and the canoe sailed on down the river. It's natural to panic in the face of pain or fear. But we have a weapon against it. It says in the psalm for today, "The Lord is a safe place for the oppressed, a safe place in difficult times. Those who know your name trust you, because you have not abandoned any who seek you, Lord." Because when the disciples woke Jesus up, he didn't look at the storm and go, "Well, you're on your own," and get off the side of the boat and walk away, leaving his friends to drown. He also didn't roll over and go, "Oh, 5 more minutes, you guys." No, he responded. Friends, he always responds. And if you feel like he's not responding, guess what? Ask again. And again and again, keep trusting that God knows what you need. And now sometimes it feels like Jesus just won't calm the storm. I have been there. Sometimes you keep begging him to wake up, and it's like, he won't wake up. This dude took an Ambien. He's not responding. I can't make him wake up and make this stop. Now, I say this respectfully. Sometimes that happens. It could be that you're about to wake up to your own resources, resources you don't know you have, that will help you get through the storm. It could be that Jesus is looking up at you and going, "I'm here and you're fine. You've got this. Trust me." Now, of course, it also says in the psalm, "Let the wicked go straight to the grave, the same for every nation that forgets God." That's the biblical equivalent of saying, "Oh, F you, Sessions." That's spitting epithets when you're too angry to do anything else. But this is in the holy text. You know what that means? That means that God knows and sees your ugly reactions to the ugliness of the world. There is nothing you can feel or say or do that is a surprise to the creator of the universe. God is okay when you bring God your anxiety or bitterness. In fact, that's part of how we get through the storm. We offload all that stuff onto God, and when we're done, we pick ourselves up and dust ourselves off and say, okay, what can I do in the meantime? How can I help these people? How can I help myself? That's how we don't allow our outrage to swamp the boat and cause us to give up. Next week, I will be participating in at least one action designed to protest the treatment of immigrants at our southern border. If you're interested, come talk to me after the service and we'll coordinate. And there's also the Rapid Response Network, which is a program in San Jose designed to show up when ICE raids a home, which they do a lot, and documents what they do, as they are not known for respecting human rights unless they are watched, as well as offering immigrants legal support as they navigate the intentionally labyrinthine immigration and customs system. Now, the Rapid Response Network does not keep people from being detained. They don't interfere. But they do keep a close eye on the people doing the detaining. Again, talk to me if you're interested in that. But if you're feeling flooded already, that's okay. If you're in your own storm, as I'm sure some of us are today, take care of yourself. The process of trusting Jesus doesn't happen once and then it's over. You can't offload all of your stuff and then, great, I feel fantastic. Sometimes you'll have faith that everything is fine, and other times you'll be running around the boat like your hair is on fire, going, we're all going to die. That's okay. But no matter what you're doing, Jesus is still in the boat with you, awake or asleep, no matter how violent the storm. I don't know about you, but I come to worship to be replenished, to wake up the divine in my own life, and I need that once a week at least. So will you pray with me as I read the last line of the psalm for today? I'll be thinking of the nations as earthly government, but you can take it however you like. Let us pray if you feel so led. Get up, Lord. Don't let people prevail. Let the nations be judged before you. Strike them with fear, Lord. Let the nations know they are only human. Amen.